episode 92 of Drunk on Comics. And normally at this point, I would say a stupid joke, they wouldn't laugh. Then it's turned into me saying some commentary, and they won't laugh. Now I'm just going to shut up and have you guys not laugh.
Isn't this how we started last week with almost the exact same words?
No, it wasn't last week, Harold Ramis.
Yeah, and it was normally at this point, I'd say something funny and witty, and the guys would make fun of me.
Yeah, now I'm just not going to say anything.
Dude, that's way better.
I don't know. I find it funny. But yeah. Then again, I'm drunk. Yeah. On comics.
Yay!
And that's who we are. Yeah. That's what we do.
Welcome, everybody.
Fuck you guys.
So, this is our weekly podcast. I'm Derek.
I'm Matt.
I'm pissed.
And Tony. And we're here with Drunk on Comics, where we're going to sit around. We're going to talk about some comic books. We're going to talk about maybe some convention news, maybe some collecting news, maybe some industry news. We're going to have nuggets of pissdom from Mr. Tony over there.
We're going to try to be funny, but we're not going to come across as that.
Well, mostly because you're just pissed.
Oh,
yeah. Are you going to be an angry comic today?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, guys, let's get things kicked off.
Indeed, we shall.
Let's do a little off the shelf, where we're going to talk about books that came out this week, or in Matt's case, since he's been absent, stuff that maybe didn't come out this week.
It came out last week.
Last year.
But it's still good. It's still good in the hood, you know?
Off the dusty shelf with Matt?
You know what? No, you can probably still find these on the shelf.
Yeah. I was going to say, tell you the truth, it's just kind of like a Kevin review. He goes to his shop and picks up.
Yeah, but Kevin thinks they're new.
This is true.
Yeah.
I actually wasn't sure. I've been real busy and behind on my reading, and I was like, I think some of my books this week are new, and then I looked them up before the show started, and I go, man, all of these were from last week, so.
Yeah. So, little warning though. Now in Matt's case, if you haven't read your books by now, that's your own fault because they've been out for over a week now. But with the books that Tony and I are going to talk about, they came out this week. So if you haven't read things, we probably will be talking about things that happened in the book, and you know there are these things called spoilers.
Yep, that's where we tell you something that happens that you didn't want to know.
Kind of like Tony told us a joke. We just didn't want to know that either.
Yeah. Well, Tony spoils his jokes for different reasons, though. It's a different use of the word spoiler.
Fuck you guys. I'm done with this.
So I've actually got two, so I'm going to start with...
Before you do, Off the Shelf is brought to you by Motor City Comic Con.
I was going to say I'm going to start with our sponsors, but...
Oh, yeah, that was good.
Yeah, I'm just kidding. I'm just saving face right now.
Yeah. So, MotorCityComicCon.com, go check them out. It is May 16th through the 18th in Novi, Michigan, at the Suburban Collection Showplace. When I concentrate really hard, I can still say it right.
Showdown.
Yeah, showcase showdown. Yeah, so we're going to be there. Lots of other great guests are going to be there. And the new media guest this week that they announced was Christina Loken, which I was like, ooh.
Ah, I know her.
Really good looking Terminator.
Blood Rain.
Oh, I
only the first one, though.
Yeah.
All right, good Matt, times. All right. So I'm going to start off with three, number five. It's 3-T-H-R-E-E, like you spell it out, not the number.
Was there 100 afterwards?
No, actually, but it does... come into the Spartan mythology that we know. Story by my favorite, Kieran Gillen. Art by Ryan Kelly and colors by Jordi Belair. And also, historical consultant, Professor Stephen Hodkinson. And I think it's important to give a shout-out to the professor there for his great study. What Kieran Gillen has written here as my first review when I did number one of this series, it's really... trying to give a different angle at that Spartan myth. We all think of the Spartan warriors. They fought at Thermopylae. They were all about freedom, and 300 of them died, and that's, you know, the myth that, you know, Frank Miller helped perpetuate.
Can I be stupid for a minute?
Yeah.
You mean normal?
No, like way dumber than normal.
Okay.
Thermopylae, I can't help it. Every time I see it, I look at it and I say Thermopile.
Thermopile. you're from Ohio, aren't you?
It's Ohio.
So, In this story, he's showing a different side of Spartan culture, particularly of the Hellites. Three Hellites have been escaped because they had killed some Spartans, and rather than just be murdered by the Spartans in turn, they're trying to escape for freer lands. Eventually, they get cornered into a little crack in the wall, and one of these Hellites, who was actually a soldier in the past, they killed a Spartan warrior, and there's one holding off 300 in a very tiny crack in the wall, just like Thermopylae. So there's some nice, image reversal there. Anyways, he's killing a whole bunch of the Spartans, but eventually he's just going to be overwhelmed anyways. But what's really nice about this book is there's two guys and a girl that are escaping. And in the end, after a little bit of lovemaking, the woman is the only one that gets away. And she has twins, and she names the twins after the two guys that helped her escape. And there's a nice image touch of there, because one of them was really quiet, like the soldier one, and then one of them would not stop crying, just like the loudmouth wordsmith of their group. So it was really kind of cool, and it's a really nice finish to a really good story. It's only 5 issues long, so you can probably pick up all of them or ask your comic book store to back order them, or I'm pretty sure it'll be in a graphic novel form here.
It'll be a trade here, yeah.
No, real soon. It's from Image Comics.
The movie comes out.
Yeah, the movie of three. but no, I think it's really great, and I think he tells a good story. And honestly, read the commentary and the little interview between Kieran Gillen and Professor Hodgkinson at the end. You'll learn more about Spartan culture and history, and by reading this, you'll be less dumb, and you can say that you're as smart as someone from Michigan rather than Ohio.
Ohio. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Which I do have to give a shout. I mean, because like, I actually started reading that book, and the story just wasn't for me.
Mm-hmm.
But Ryan Kelly's art with Jordy Belair's colors, good Lord.
Yeah.
Wow, they were good.
And also, for $2.99 an issue, well worth the story. You get a lot of story. You get a lot of, you just said, the art.
There's a lot of pictures.
And you learn. And I think you learn something, too, and that's good. So be cultured.
Yay.
So here's the thing. I can't pretend to be pissed this whole podcast just because there's beer and I love that. And
wait, will you? Because you've been really quiet and it's been awesome.
All right, now to piss me off again. Fuck you. No, but seriously, like, I was going to try to like do like an angry review, but then I didn't want to scream into the microphone, and I just would probably start laughing at myself if I was like super mean. So
Tony's really not good at being the Hulk.
No, I'm not.
I mean, his normal grammar is identical to the Hulk, but but when he gets angry, all of a sudden it just turns into Hulk.
What's my other word?
Hulk. Hulk, Hulk.
Hulk hit?
Hulk, Hulk, Hulk.
Hulk clobbering time. But what I do want to talk about, because it is, I don't know, uplifting. It is a story of a man finding his way in this world. Written by Cullen Bunn. Art by Gabriel Walta. And colors by Jordy Belair. It is Magneto number one.
Awesome, awesome book.
Straight up from the cover, it just looks like inviting.
You got the, I think, the standard cover with the barbed wire helmet around him.
Paolo Rivera did that cover.
I really like that wire helmet. That's, like, I don't know, that's my favorite.
Well, you know, the thing, if we're going to talk about the cover for just a second, it was actually pointed out to me, which I didn't actually catch right at first, but the shadow on his face is all there as if the helmet was actually there too, which is it's really, really nice work.
I had thought that with the barbed wire that there was going to be more to do with his past again, being in.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking, that this was going to be set in the now.
But once again, covers don't mean anything.
No, they do
good
not.
Good thing I didn't judge this book by its cover.
That is one thing, too, that I'm glad they at least made a quick, snippet in the Uncanny X-Men of. Where's Magneto? Oh, he's off doing his own thing.
Yeah.
So, like, continuity-wise, you kind of know this is going on if you've been reading that book. I'm so glad that Marvel's at least trying to keep something separate and not have 50 million people on teams that are jumping up and down and around because
we don't need more Wolverines.
No, and to be honest, though, I feel like Marvel has been doing a little bit better about that. And I hope that they don't jump the gun.
I think that they have kind of given the nod, the tip of the hat to where characters are if they're doing their own thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, they'll still bring them in if they're, you know, a big enough character, but...
Yes, I want to start with art, which was amazing, but there is a scene in here that it just... Oh, it's gruesome, but amazing.
And are you talking about, like, the second page?
Yeah. The guy that has the street signs... Or his fillings refilled with that.
Metal.
Oh, man. And that's when you kind of start to see what this book is going to be about.
Well, that instantly went, holy shit, this isn't your normal Marvel book.
Yeah. Like, I was reading it, on the couch next to my wife, and she even went, ugh. Like, that's a bit gruesome, a bit graphic, but I think right at home for... this dark tale.
Well, you get a lot of internal dialogue too, which is nice to, especially when it's a bad guy. And that's what also pisses me off. Magneto's turning back into a bad guy. I mean, he was doing good.
Yeah, well, I don't know. He's just being more of a, almost you'd say an anti-hero. Because he seems to only be going after people who have killed mutants. Which, I mean, arguably it doesn't make him a good guy. But he's not going back to the, like, hey, let me terrorize all of humanity. I'm only targeting those who are targeting mutants.
Okay, but let's take the scene where the maid comes up. And it sounded like almost like he was going to just kill her if she knew who he was, but then just gave her some money and she forgot about it when she's on the phone. Like, that's kind of, like, not...
That shows self-restraint, though. I mean, it shows that his mind is really bent towards... Like they said, you know, this whole idea that it's second nature, right? It's just autopilot. He kills people on autopilot. I think that's a great moment where it shows, no, that is his MO. The first thing he'll do is kill someone. And then he goes, no, she's just a maid. She's doing me a favor. Like, he has to rationalize it to himself to actually do the right thing. And I think that's...
Okay, what about him killing all the guards?
I don't think he killed all the guards.
You don't think so?
No, I think he incapacitated most of them. Jory Belair has a lot of good blood. If she wants blood on this page, she'll show the blood. And I didn't see much blood in those scenes. I think he mostly just beat them up, really.
I'm going to agree with... I'm going to agree because... Actually, like,
agree with who? We both said something different.
No, I'm going to agree with Matt. Mostly because I just want to piss you off. But, like, if you look... Like, yeah, you see a lot of shrapnel, but I don't see any guards dead.
Yeah. I mean, you get a little bit of drops of blood and stuff, but...
You show me one dead guard on the pages. Walter doesn't show any dead guards.
Oh, never mind. Well, I don't know. The guy that says, it's Magneto, looks like his head's about ready to be impaled in the back. Yeah. So that might be death.
Either or, I do like on that scene, though, or on that page, though, when it looks like he's forming his helmet out of shrapnel.
Oh, yeah.
See, but that's the one thing I didn't like so much, because I thought his powers are still in...
Oh, no, yeah, yeah. No, I liked it as art and looking at it.
Yeah.
What pisses me off, continuity. Well, what the fuck happened
two with pages or a couple pages later, he actually mentions the fact that, you know, I would have just reshaped the metal inside you, but now he's basically just got blunt force. I'll just rip it out of you.
Yeah, and I actually thought about the same thing. It's like...
Well, how did you just form that helmet? Maybe that's like his one special...
Superpower.
I've done this so many times, although... Traditionally, he's only had the one helmet that is stayed intact.
Yeah, and what does this helmet do for him? Because
it makes him look fucking awesome. That's what it does.
I'm sorry, Magneto's helmet is iconic. And
all right, so I was having this conversation at the bar yesterday regarding this comic, that this is Marvel's attempt at making an image book, more or less. Would you guys agree with that or no?
Why are they trying to make an image book?
They're trying to make a book that's got... I mean, well, look at the creators and the artists that they have on it. You have Colin Bunn and Jordy Belair. They're very much about telling not a mainstream story,
yeah,
but a good, solid...
But Walter doing pencils, I mean, he is a pretty standard Marvel artist, and this is not his normal style. That being said, and this is even Colin Bunn's normal style, I wouldn't say as far as stories. I love this, and I don't want you to get me wrong, but this is a very, very indie approach.
Is it a lot like the Marvel Knights or the Punisher Max?
Not that I read.
Okay.
No, I haven't read a lot of those.
That's why I haven't in it kind of.
And I'm not. Pass up on I'm not those, complaining.
No.
I just think that it's. This is not like for somebody that's looking for a normal Marvel book. This is not what they're going to expect.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't expect it. I read this. I loved it. I really, really loved it. I mean, I think between you know the line work from Walta and Belair's colors on top. They really took Cullen Bunn's story to a new level, but it doesn't look like your quote-unquote house-style book of any way, shape, or form. I mean, am I out there on this?
No. I just want to let listeners know you almost didn't pick it up, so.
Actually, yeah, I there was a lot of books that I wasn't going to pick up, and there are a lot of books that I didn't pick up because it was such a huge fucking week for me.
Except I had nothing.
Yeah. Which I don't understand how that is. Like when Tony and I were at the shop this week, Tony's laughing because he's like, "Ha ha, there's another one. Ha ha, there's another one. Ha ha, there's another one." So yeah.
Yeah, I was really glad I picked this one up too. What pisses me off about it, just to say, title page or the credits, like right on, it's on the back page. It's like that should be up front and foremost.
It's
like
the opening act, though, Tony. It's like the little teaser scene before you get the credits in the movie.
I don't know. I think the first page should always be who created the book.
I like it when it's at the beginning.
Actually, no. I'll take it. That it was at the end, I could still deal with it. I hate it when it's in the fucking middle of the book. And
I got one better for you.
What?
Punisher number 3 that came out this week.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't a credits page.
Really?
Yeah.
Did they just forget it?
It kind of looks that way.
Because like, I was going to say, I mean, I guess for number one issues, I give it a pass for being at the back. But in any other subsequent issue where you're going to have the recap page, that's the perfect place to put the titles and credits, too. So
yeah,
on number one, all right.
Yeah, but the Punisher has a recap page, and there's no credits given.
Hmm.
So I would have reviewed Punisher this week, but since I don't know who to credit.
It's not even on the cover? Like, they don't even give the last names?
The names are on the cover. Right. But, like, it's writer and penciler.
Yeah.
But I don't know if the penciler did
inks
and colors and letters. And
you learned in high school that if you can't properly cite your sources, you should just leave them out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm leaving out Punisher. Way to go, Marvel. You could have had a good review. Anyway, Tony, was there anything else that you wanted to say on this book?
Before? No, I'm good. I'll be Grumpy Cat again.
All right. God, that was a good book, though. So I'm glad you brought that one up, because otherwise I was going to have to touch on it really, really quickly. All right. My book this week is Burn the Orphanage, number 3
of
3.
That sounds mean.
It sounds like something Tony would do.
That's because he's pissy cat. But no, this is, you guys heard me talk about issue 1 here a number of months ago. This hasn't been coming out like every month. It's been about every 2, roughly.
So, still above schedule from Sandman Overture.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because that's supposed to, what the fuck happened to that book?
I have no idea.
And way better schedule than anything from Mike Mignola. But, no, this is co-written by Daniel Friedman. Co-written and drawn by our good friend Cena Grace, colors by John Rauch, and letters by Russ Wooten. And I picked up the Tom Coker cover. There were 2 covers. And this story, for 3 issues, has had 3 very different takes. And this is a chunky monkey, by the way, which is why I don't mind that it takes a couple months for you know, subsequent issues to come out, because there is so much going on there. But the story follows Rock and his buddies as they have basically progressed through life, which is also progressing like through a video game.
What's his name?
Rock.
Do they roll through this thing?
They do roll. They rock and roll. but now, Matt, this is the first time you're seeing this. I want you to flip through a little way, because you're going to notice some very, very heavy video game references in here, where he goes in. The main character basically has this little trip where it's very similar to
the Sonic the Hedgehog upside down track.
Well, and if you go a couple pages back, he's actually crawling out of a green tube like he's Mario, and it's nice little touches in the.
I see he's got a key wrapped around his chest.
Yeah.
And a headband like Snake.
Well, and he that main character is based on Fist of Fury.
Okay.
When I talked to Cena here this past summer, maybe it's more than every 2 months that this book's coming out, but whatever. When I talked to Cena and interviewed him this last summer, it's a Fist of Fury homage, but there's so many different things in this book, and the next page, Matt, you're gonna love. It's total 16-bit. Like, you know, Sega style. But this book was fucking crazy because it was all over the place, but in a great way. The conversation between the two friends at the beginning of this is them sitting in a diner and they're talking about relationships. And talking about this and that. And it's one of the most beautiful dialogues I've ever seen between two characters, let alone two people. And I just sat there going, God, I could read an entire issue of these two people sitting at a table and having dinner. It's that good. There was one nice little thing in here too, which I don't know if you guys caught, and I was talking to another friend last night, but you guys watch many sitcoms?
Occasionally.
What's a sitcom?
Yeah. You notice who the waitress looks like by any chance?
Two broke girls.
Yeah.
Two broke girls.
Yeah, they even call her Cat in this. And she makes a reference to, like, hey, you're checking out my twins, you know. And I just thought that was great. But it is nice, too, because even in the background, you've got you can't see her from the face, but you got the blonde one in the back as well. So
nice.
There are just a lot of really, really fun things in here. But as a jumping on point, you know what? I think you'd be okay. Even though it's the third issue, you're going to be a little confused.
It said 3 of 3 on the front. Is that the end, or are they going to keep going?
It's actually going to keep going. Okay. With an ongoing series, which is going to be Burn the Orphanage, Born to Lose. But, you know, this is something where if you're looking for a little bit different book from your standard superhero book, you like fun, you like, you like fun, you like funny, you like action, and you want to actually have a good, solid look at character development, and this is a book to pick up. And if nothing else, when Rock's getting beat down, there's one nice little thing in here where he goes, huh, that rock looks like, and it's a vagina. The rock looks like a vagina. And,
you should have told everyone. You should have just said it looks like a
spoiler alert.
And then they have to go pick it up to see what it looks like.
Which is great though, because I actually chatted with Cena briefly this week, and I'm like, yeah, by the way, you're an asshole for drawing that in, because I was reading it in my truck. I was at lunch, and I'm like, all right, I got time to read this. And I'm sitting there, I spit coffee all over my fucking windshield when I saw it. Cause that rock looks like, I was like, yeah, it was terrible. But
did they ever get around to burning down the orphanage?
The children are out first, right?
You actually you need to read it, Tony. I'm not going to spoil that part.
Okay.
But it's an orphanage of the mind.
What?
Well, and actually the vagina rock was the vagina rock apparently is metaphor, because Rock's a big pussy.
Mm.
That comes from the co-writer himself.
I get it.
So, but yeah, no, this book is just cool as shit. It's fun, and you really pick up the trade if you can. But grab issue 3, go have fun with it. And Tony, I know you didn't get a chance to read this book, but this book is right up your alley. Like that. Well, you read. I know you read at least the first one, if not the first two. But yeah, I mean, video game references galore. So go have fun with it.
Cool. I've got one more quick book.
We didn't say you could do that.
Yeah. Well, I'm stealing Kevin's spot this week.
You have quick books.
Yeah. I shouldn't say that I'm stealing Kevin's spot and then say that I'm going to do a quick review, because then I'll just go much longer. But
your first review wasn't quick.
I know. This one is going to, because I really don't want to give away a whole lot. But Uncanny Avengers, number 17, story by Rick Remender, art, find the page, sorry, Steve McNiven, Jay Liston as the inker, and Laura Martin with Ponzer, Mila, and Molinar for colors.
A lot of people doing colors.
Yeah. Here's the thing. When I first...
I don't know where that's going, but...
Well, I've kind of been on... I like the story that Rick Remender has been telling. The biggest problem I've had is like, wait, how come all this really big-ass shit that he's bringing up in Uncanny Avengers isn't getting made reference to in any of the other Avengers or other Marvel books, right? Such as the Peak, the big sword space station that protects the world. It crashed early on in this series. And yet when they did the whole Infinity crossover, it was still up in the sky defending Earth. It was actually a big point of the Infinity crossover event that Thanos' guys were on the Peak, right? And so I'm asking myself, where is this fitting all in the continuity, right? And I'm, okay, well, they're telling this other story, and it doesn't really matter what fits in the continuity, so just go with it. Sometimes you just have to suspend disbelief. But I've now realized... Yeah.
Says the guy who's reading comic books. Yeah.
So, but now I realize that, yeah, this is going to be... This is like a... I want to say an extended what if, but this is definitely going to be an alternate timeline of events that could have happened, because shit gets real in this. It's called Ragnarok Now. That's the title of it. And it holds up to its title. Characters have died in the series. They keep mentioning that Kang, Mortis, is trying from the future to fix everything in the time stream. So I'm like, cool, we get our big Deus Ex Machia, you know, time travel ending where everything's okay and we're fine. And this being the end of the Ragnarok series with the Apocalypse twins, I thought, hey, it's all going to wrap up in this book, and I'm going to be really disappointed because I predicted the ending. But I didn't. Because Rick Remender knows how to tell a good story. And so this is still ongoing. I was about to give up on this book after this Ragnarok story arc.
How many fucking books would you be collecting then? Two?
Maybe. I got bills to pay. Yeah. Mouths to feed.
Apparently on my heaviest week, at, you know, of 2014, you couldn't find a good book to talk about, but yeah.
But I'm going to keep going with this one because I'm exceptionally intrigued where it goes. Again, not to give too many spoilers or go too deeply into it, but one of my favorite scenes is, or one of the things I love is, like, people have been burned and beat up. Like Captain America, his whole face, side of his face is burned, and it looks gruesome. And it looks like these guys are in pain, and I'm watching them fight going like, wow, they are being heroes. It's not just that their costume's been ripped up, but they're actually, like, physically damaged and scarred from this fight. Thor lost, basically burned all of his right arm.
And he had a nipple fall off.
Yeah, a whole nipple. The one that was pierced.
Made that up, or was that in there? Because I haven't read this yet, and I don't know.
He's making it up. It was his pierced nipple, his favorite nipple. Good story. I'm glad. I'm very curious to see where it keeps going. The art is fantastic, so keep it up, because actually earlier on this series, that was one of the things that was bugging me, was some of the art. I won't name names, but it's just my aesthetics. But yeah, so at the end, Odin is talking to Thor, who Thor is really disappointed because essentially they've all lost.
Well, and Havok lost a testicle.
Yeah. And Odin's just like, I knew this was a chance that this could have happened. It sucks. It's okay, son. Pat on the shoulder.
And then, Odin's a dick.
And then Odin walks away. And I'm like, wow, I really have no idea where this is going next, but I'm looking forward to seeing how this story will conclude. So if you haven't been reading Uncanny Adventures, the Ragnarok Now will be another trade paperback that I'm sure will be coming out here in a couple months, and then you can just get right back onto it. But I think it's telling a great story. And if you like superheroes that have to sacrifice and have the potential of losing, this is a good story for right now. So,
you really think they have the potential to lose? They don't.
For now.
That is actually the one thing. For as much as I love my superhero stories, like, Daredevil can't ever lose.
Not for long.
No.
That's what I'm saying about this is when I was reading it, I'm like, I know the heroes win at the end of it, and I got to the end of the book, I'm like, they haven't won yet. So it might be that I know that they'll win eventually, but they haven't won yet that keeps me coming back to it. So that's why I like it.
Gotcha. Before we get to news and notes, there's something that I found that I just find hilarious that I want to share with everyone from around the net.
So it's not news or a note?
This is the interwebs?
Yes, this is whatever we called this segment from a long time ago that I just wanted to bring back up because we haven't done it in forever. And the website is gazoogle.net. Derek, type in gazoogle.net.
How do you spell gazoogle?
G-I-Z-O-O-G-L-E.
G-I-Z. Okay, there it is, gazoogle.
Now type in Drunk on Comics.
Oh, actually, I've seen this website before.
What, Drunk on Comics or
no, gazoogle?
And it will ghettofy any web page that comes up, such as our Twitter account, Drunk on Comics. From I don't know what you can faded tweet our asses all you like, biatch. Twizzles is easy as fuck. There be no reasons our fat asses don't hood up cell phone numbers. LOL. I can't believe that you typed that out, Derek.
Drunk on Comics on Twizzle was all the sickest fucking bullshit from Drunk on Comics, yo. Home of the podcast by the same name, focusing on comic books, props, industry hype. Yeah, this is...
booze and little nuggets.
Yeah.
So it's like Snoop Dogg got a hold of your Twitter account and, well, or your webpage and
anything.
Like, your web designer.
Usually most of the front pages of anything. Now, if you start clicking links within it, it's going to go to the normal thing. But Wikipedia ones in particular, like I typed in X-Men the other day and it was like I had side by side the real Wikipedia thing for the X-Men talking about getting a group together. And then this just saying all the...
Wait. So I went to our Twitter page. This is awesome because it's just like, shit, this ain't no joke. Find our asses on iShit and FaceBizzle. Not iTunes and Facebook.
Like I said, this is the most random funny thing that I've had fun with. Go to any, you can pretty much look up almost, well, most sites. And
can
least,
you go to government sites?
I don't know. I haven't seen if that will. I don't know. Dude, we will play around with this in free time. We don't have enough on air. But
oh my god, dude! The
gazoogle, huh?
The twizzles, you know, that we put out are just awesome, just awesome because it totally rewrites everything that. Well, last night it was me actually typing, but. Yeah, it's just too good. Oh, my God.
USA Jobs, the federal government straight-up legit jobs joint.
Why does Snoop Dogg carry an umbrella?
Why?
Faux drizzle.
Okay, so enough of that. Let's get into news and notes and back to comic book and booze. But
You can't...
Derek can't be pulled away now.
Yeah, I'm just
gonna... It's like a flashback to his high school experience.
Yeah, like one of our writers sent out a Follow Friday thing, and he said the best people around or something along that, and his tweet pops up as the dumbest play is up in that gal, homie.
I wonder if you wrote things in. it brings it back to the Queen's English.
Yeah, like if you write it in ghettoese,
becomes Shakespearean verse.
But yes, gazoogle.net.
All right.
I have fun with that.
Cool. Yeah. And one more time, Off the Shelf was brought to you by Motor City Comic Con, biatch.
So let's go into some news. Derek, you got anything?
I do have some stuff.
I actually want to start sending this through Kazoogle now.
I think, oh, damn it, yes. That would be awesome. Lena Dunham, who is a writer for some show on HBO, if I heard correctly.
Girls.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It's just called Girls.
All right.
It follows a bunch of boys.
It follows a bunch of girls who like to have sex with boys, but
yeah,
it's supposed to be a highly acclaimed show.
Yeah. The interesting part with Girls that actually that makes a hell of a lot more sense now is that she's writing a new, I think it's a miniseries for Archie Comics called Girls.
Okay.
So is it following their characters on the show? Girls?
It's following the girls in Archie.
Okay.
Okay.
They're going to act like the girls on Girls because it's a little erotic.
I don't know. From what I do understand is that this might be more along the lines of, say, like the Afterlife with Archie, where it's not necessarily in continuity, but it's more of it's just a different take.
Gotcha.
That's coming out here sometime this year, I believe. I'm sorry, it's coming out in 2015. It is a 4-issue miniseries.
Cool.
To
make everyone else feel completely inadequate, Laura Dunning, it was like 23 or something.
Lena Dunham?
Lena.
Yeah,
Lena
you totally Dunham. Butchered her name.
I did, I'm sorry. I feel like John Travolta at the Oscars.
What was that?
Oh, he totally messed up Idina Menzel's name. A bunch of people got upset with him. To be fair, he does have dyslexia.
And to be fair, he's John Travolta.
Yeah. But anyways, that's besides one. Anyways, but she is incredibly young and has tremendous success as a writer already with an award-winning show and tons of kudos. And I've seen her a couple interviews, and she comes across as really real and nice and straightforward. So I wish her all the best.
Yeah, it'd be cool to see. I tell you what, man. I mean, Archie making a lot of different changes.
I might actually have to start reading Archie. I know you guys have been reading it, The Afterlife you loved. I know Archie's comics have been around for, like, since Derek's been born.
Before.
Yeah, before Derek's been born, so yeah. That's really old.
Yeah, they were just passing those stories down, you know, orally because...
Homer, I think, wrote a couple of Archie comics before he wrote his Odyssey.
When I was a kid, there still wasn't a written word yet. You know, I mean, it was like pictures of, there were pictures and stuff that we drew on.
First comic books and cave drawings.
Well, no, the first comic books that I ever read were in the pyramids, but whatever. You know, so, Tony
Eye Ralph. Eagle, Pharaoh.
Eye squiggly guy. Line.
Yeah.
Olive branch.
Okay. Oh, cat person.
Yeah.
Speaking of, would you say cat or cap?
Cat.
Oh, well. Sorry, I misheard you. Captain America, though, is getting his own theme park at Disney World, kind of.
This is actually one of the things that I'm most excited about, Disney owning Marvel, is that they are going full force with the property rights.
Yeah. I wonder how... I'm still curious how that all pans out with Universal Studios, because I know that they have some Marvel rides, and they have a Marvel, you know, wing of their theme park. But... I don't know. I think that both can exist, and I'm really excited for this installment. Essentially, it's you just get to meet Captain America, and he'll sign autographs, and you know, it's a great thing for kids to feel like they're seeing.
Well, and you get to walk through and see like the prototype shields and all.
Yep.
Like, I have zero interest in going to Disney because for the most part, I just hate people.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of those people there that I hate. But this actually makes me go, you know what? Maybe I do want to go to Disney.
But they did something like that because it's in Tomorrowland in Disney World. And I think they did stuff with the Stark Expo back in the when Iron Man 2 came out. They made an exhibit for that, too. I mean, because Disney, the whole idea of the Stark Expo and Iron Man 2 is very much a Walt Disney idea. That's what Epcot was all about, like, showcasing the world of tomorrow and stuff. Yeah. And so...
It'd be sweet if down the road they just made a whole theme park of just Marvel stuff. So you got the Magic Kingdom with Mickey, you got that Animal Forest with all their animals, and then you have Marvel with Marvel.
I want to make a Captain Planet section. But have Don Cheadle be there and just be a dick the whole time.
Might work.
Did you guys see the the little sneak preview of DC's newest Native American superhero who's part of the Justice League United?
No.
What happened to this? Who's the guy like from the Super Friends cartoon that could grow?
Yumchuck?
No. Yeah, but that he used to go Nuckchuck.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was Apache Chief.
Yeah, see? Alright. That's not him though?
No, it's a brand new it's a young girl, like probably late teens, early
Does she have shaman powers?
Well, she is in part based on a Native American woman who was actually an activist in real life.
Okay.
And I hope I don't totally butcher it, but the woman who the character is loosely based on is Shannon Kustachin. But this is part of Justice League United, which is, I'm trying to remember who's actually writing this book, but it's I think it's Jeff Lemire, if I remember correctly, is writing it. This is the Justice League Canada.
Okay. Yeah. Book. So is she Pacific Northwest Native American then?
Well, they're saying that she's going to, I think, Cree, if I remember correctly. Or at least the woman that it's based on, she was Cree.
Okay.
But yeah, so like they released in, I think it was in Diamond or whatever, a picture of the cover, and that's the first look that anybody's gotten of her. But it's Justice League United. We thought it was going to be JLC for Justice League Canada, and rather than my favorite joke is the JLA, but
the JLC, eh?
The JLA, yeah. just kind of neat. And I wish I knew more of who was doing the art on this, but the whole thing is actually really pretty.
I'll say more will come out. We'll keep you updated.
Yep. What else you got, guys?
I saw something, and this is, I guess, I didn't know so much of what Gotham was going to be on TV, but they've cast a young Bruce Wayne and a Selina Kyle.
Yeah.
So this is then meaning this is all before Batman has come about
yeah.
in the TV show? I didn't know that. I thought this was going to following.
You should listen in when you're here on the podcast sometime, because we talked about that.
No, well, but I thought that it was going to follow... Fuck you.
Tony was pissed. He had his earmuffs on.
Yeah.
La, 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 la.
The girl that they cast as Selina Kyle definitely fits a young Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah. That's what I almost was like. That looks like child shot of Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
That kid looks like a very good young Ben Affleck.
I don't know how you can make that comparison. His mouth is closed.
Yeah, how can he breathe?
the girl though also reminds me of Erica Eleniak, who was. In Under Siege.
Is she the one that jumps out of the birthday cake?
Yeah. Yep. She was in a number of other movies, but her first role was the girl that Elliot kissed in E.T.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but that's actually who this young actress reminds me of. Looks a lot like her as well.
Hmm.
But as far as looks go, casting, they did a good job. I have no idea what
their acting capabilities are, but...
Yeah. Well, I don't really have any much idea of acting capabilities for most people either.
Tony acts like he knows how to put two and two together.
Equals five.
Yeah. Little bit of news. Former DC president Paul Levitz has now joined the board of directors at Boom Studios.
Hmm.
So, it's kind of like he was president of DC back in the early to late 2000s. Okay. So it kind of interesting to see what's going to go on there. But once again, Boom has been putting out great quality books. And I'm hoping that this just means that there's going to be even more and more stuff coming from them.
He's going to blow it up.
Boom.
Kaboom.
Tony, what else did you have?
Apparently
Ultraman is banned in Malaysia.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I was just going to bring up that one. It's the stupidest thing ever, but okay.
Yeah. Well, and I've actually, God, for as terrible as this is, I've actually done a little research on this story.
That's it. This is like, this is, I don't know if this is really news that our listeners need to know, but it's the news that they're going to.
It's fun. It'll culture them a little bit.
Yeah. Apparently, it appears that the main reason is that they use the word Allah in the book. And basically saying that Ultraman is like Allah or something.
When did they say Allah in the book?
I don't know. Okay. I still haven't read it yet. I just read the news.
Are you sure it wasn't Allah, ya?
All y'all. Yeah. But yeah, so, yeah, sorry, Malaysia, you can't read Ultraman, the Ultra Power.
Our one Malaysian listener's like, aww.
Oh, actually. Who knows? Maybe we'll have a whole bunch of Malaysian listeners because we could just
review. We could just say Ultraman is stupid, and then maybe they'll like, or we'll review it, and then they can actually
listen to it. It'll, they'll be like, oh my God, it's like I was right there.
Circumvent the. We'll have Kevin read it on the air.
why would we circumcise it? Oh, circumvent. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Fiona Staples has her front cover for the Ultimate Spider-Man coming out.
Marvel debut.
Yes.
Which I wasn't buying this series, but she's doing the variant cover on it, and yeah, if I can get my hands on it, I'll buy it. Just because fucking love her artwork. And even though it's only the cover, it'll give me something to look at for the next couple months while I'm waiting for Saga to come out. But speaking of Saga, Tony, how far are you into the trade paperbacks?
How long do I have for this bet?
Till
the next one comes out.
It's not a bet; it was just an agreement.
Oh yeah, gentleman's agreement. I'm getting closer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You thought about reading it?
Yeah.
He made him think of his old Sega, so he pulled that out and played some Sonic the Hedgehog for a little while, and then.
Yeah. Well, it's at this point, it's almost a what if you would read it.
You know? What if Tony would read Saga?
Yeah.
Mind blown.
How many issues are they?
It's issue 18 just wrapped up. The third trade paperback will be coming out here shortly.
Dude, why can't you read that? It's 18 books.
You go buy it for me.
And actually, that's what it all boils down to, is that Tony's cheap.
Why doesn't Derek let us borrow it?
Yeah, he seems to have all of them. Derek's selfish.
I know. Derek, all like, you guys don't know how to handle your books just because you eat it with bacon fingers.
Oh, actually,
bacon fingers are great, okay? It makes you like.
Do you have any idea what I sold issue 1 and 2 that were my backup copies of Saga for?
No.
I traded issue 1 and 2 for $125 worth of other books.
Nice.
So, yeah.
That's a good deal.
Your bacon fingers are not touching my books.
Hey, you know, if you would have held out, you could probably have gotten more.
Yeah.
Actually, I did. I did damn well on that because I picked those books up for $1.50 each from somebody that didn't know what the fuck he had. And you could just go down to any shop, like, I don't know, Fanfare Sports Entertainment in Kalamazoo, where we go every week, and pick up the trade paperbacks.
I will have to do that.
I think I'm going to call up there and have them put that in your poll. So when you go in, it's going to be in there. And actually, I know a good handful of the guys listen to the show. So if you guys are listening ahead of time, before Wednesday, put Saga Volume 1 and 2 in Tony's poll and make him buy it when he gets there. So, all right.
Now my Hulk is coming back. Don't make me do what I don't want to do.
Hulk gets stronger the angrier he gets. Tony gets stronger the more he has to spend money because he's that cheap.
Yeah.
It makes him that angry.
Yeah, yeah. It's like if there's work or money involved. What if Age of Ultron number one?
What if Age of Ultron?
This is actually
no. This is kind of funny because the whole point of the Age of Ultron is that they broke the space-time continuum. So how do you have alternate timelines when you broke it all?
And not only that, but that whole story was kind of a what if Ultron
was smart enough to attack them from the future?
Yeah. Like, this is the biggest what the fuck ever.
No, it's what if, not what the fuck. Yeah.
No, seriously, though. The whole thread behind this is if...
number one.
is if Janet was never alive.
Yeah, that if Wolverine had gone back and killed other Avengers rather than Hank Pym.
No. I think this is just if she was never alive, Hank wouldn't have had that infamous slap her or whatever thing.
He made Ultron before that, though.
Did he?
Yeah. That came much later in the... I'm pretty sure. Maybe I got that wrong. Listeners can correct me if I'm wrong. But I'm pretty sure his spousal abuse moment was after... years after he created Ultron.
Okay, well...
All right.
Either or...
Yeah, but if Janet wasn't around, he probably would have, like, manipulated Ultron into being more like a love bot.
That's Jocasta. That's why he created Jocasta.
See, I just don't understand. What's the need for me to read this? What am I going to get from this that could have been any which way?
What if used to be, like, real bizarre and kind of like... Honestly, not jokes, but kind of jokes. Like, the writers are just, what if Daredevil didn't lose his eyesight? What would have happened then?
No, yeah. my favorite still is if, what was the what if Luke Cage was white?
Did they really write that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Kevin actually, and this is a long time ago.
Now I want to read. See, it's stuff like that you're like, that does change a lot of things, but just like...
Well, that was a very, very racially insensitive issue.
I'm sure it was, and it was probably written in a time where racial sensitivity was not something Marvel was concerned about.
Kevin has that, and actually, it was a year and a half ago. Kevin put something up on the website about it.
Yeah.
And there's a picture of the Luke Cage, and there he's like, uh-oh, Luke Cage's come for you, and I'm one angry-ass honky. Like, I'm like, wait. What?
All right, so what ifs used to be a lot of fun, but, like, the what if AVX was just kind of like, okay, four issues to tell me a different, like, the what ifs used to be a single issue, and that was it. And that's why you'd be like, I'll check out that what if.
Yeah, it was something different, not an event that you just had last year to try to tell us how it could have ended or... more or less Marvel trying to tell us how they should have ended it.
Like, yeah.
What if we wrote a good story?
Yeah. No, because, like, speaking of that, like, the repercussions from any of these stories aren't sticking around. Like, what happened to the Hammers and Fear Itself? No one talks about that
anymore.
Well,
they had the Fearless Defenders were going around fighting those and stuff. It just became less important. You know, they're earth-shattering for a moment, and then they became less important. The whole time-space continuum being broken right now doesn't seem to factor in anymore. For a while, it was, like, really important. And that was the only thing that really came out of Age of Ultron that I thought had any significance. The rest of it, I was like, I didn't even get to see the battle where Ultron took over. That's what I wanted to see. Instead, to see something like that, you'll have to pick up Uncanny Avengers, which has the heroes losing.
This issue. Yeah.
But, yeah.
The one thing I do like about the what ifs, though, is it's actually when Marvel tries to actually say, hey, look, we can't afford to actually kill a character off, but...
But if we did, this... Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, because it's...
Also, Derek loves what ifs because Uatu's in them.
No, I just tear those pages out. Yeah. What?
Nothing. All right, are we done with...
No, we are done. I don't know what the fuck that was.
I laughed. I kind of almost snorted out loud, and a snot rocket came out, so...
That's awesome.
Viewers at home, you can visualize that all you want.
Yeah, they'd have to be viewers to see that one. You couldn't Matt Murdock that.
All right.
Should we do a little Indie Turnpike?
No.
All right.
Oh, my God, I'm on fire.
Are you done?
Indie Turnpike. Go for it.
All right, what we're going to talk to you right now about is the GOAT. Quantum and Woody, GOAT, number zero, a little Valiant book. I love this cover. This cover is just so cute.
It's a throwback to the old Golden books where you have that, the binding of it has that, like gold leaf. cover to it and stuff. So it looks very much like a throwback to children's books. And being a father of a two-year-old, we got lots of books like that. Yeah. So I liked it. A almost honorable mention for Best on Tap.
Yes, if we ever bring that segment back too.
Eventually. Once something wows us, we will. Yeah. But you were reviewing this for Indy Turnpike, so.
Okay.
There was something good there.
Story written by James Asmus, art by Tom Fowler. The art is just great, and it's great to have a team where they are writing all the same books so you can see it within the pages of normal, Quantum and Woody and this little offshoot one-shot, per se. Now, I'm starting to get into Valiant because I like this world that they're expanding with all these superheroes within it and reading the Unity line. Quantum and Woody was one that I was always kind of interested in from day one when we talked about the poster and the first variant.
Why is there a goat on the cover?
Yeah, what is with this goat? And unfortunately, I haven't had time to actually get into Quantum and Woody to read the main issues to know what's all going on. I have been able to read issue number one, and as the reviews go, they are the worst superhero team. I can see that. This book in particular, though, it kind of shows how one of them really loves the goat, but the other one says it keeps burning holes in their couch and setting everything on fire because, well, the goat has superpowers.
He has laser eyes.
Yes. I guess in the
goat eyes are so scary.
In the previous edition, when the goat was around, he ate a magical interdimensional map, which gave him teleportation spells. I don't know if he's got those in this new series of Quantum and Woody or not. Like I said, I have to read the main thing. So reviewing this as a person of just reviewing this as a story about a goat, it was good. You get emotions from the goat, like when he's sad that they're dropping him off at the petting zoo. You get a backstory of the goat, an origin, if you will, of how this goat came to be. And it shows so much emotion about this stupid goat, and you see everyone around talking about the goat and whatever. Having him go off on adventures, kicking the field goal, meeting aliens. This goat's been through a lot. And to be honest, I think that he's probably the coolest character I've ever read about.
You know, I got to say...
More than Rocket Raccoon?
Yes.
Okay.
I got to say, I still have not read a Quantum and Woody book, and it's my own fault. I admit my misgivings on this. But I've heard nothing but high praise for Asmus and Fowler on the creative team on that book.
Well, just the writing is great, and the jokes that they make about the characters within the book are good. Like I said, I was able to read issue number one, and them going back and forth with each other was great. And this was probably, if I had drinking something, laughing. I normally don't want to just read out something, but this section right here, this guy is complaining about the young guy.
Quantum and Woody.
Because they just found this goat around this science fair. And I can't take any of your species to the next level if I'm constantly forced to play nursemaid. And the little kid goes, but. No, I'm done with little boys' butts. And then someone off panel goes, good, you pervert. And just in that writing, saying it out loud is a little bit different than actually reading to see how they'd be putting it in.
Exclamation points.
But it's just great writing like that. In this, you get where the sadness and how just the goat just wants to be part of their family. With Quantum and Woody, what they're kind of going through is finding out who killed their father. And not only that, is trying to find the killer. I'm not going to give away the last page, but it really, when they came to pick up the goat again, it left something for the reader to understand this dynamic and the love between this goat and these two boys, if you will. And that's all I'm going to say. But it's very revealing. Like, this is a book, if you actually like that series, if you read it, you will learn and understand a lot more of the dynamics of the duo plus their pet goat.
I'm going to borrow it.
All right.
Yoink.
Cool.
You got a booze in a book?
I do have a booze in a book. Booze in a book this week is Afterlife with Archie number 4, paired with a Goza beer. And
the Traveler?
What's that?
That's Gozer, the Traveler.
Yeah, no.
I thought this exact same thing.
Well, it sounds like somebody from New Jersey saying Gozer. It's Goza.
It's a Goza.
Goza. But Goza beer is, it's an old German style beer. And it was like, it's an unfiltered wheat beer. And it's typically between a 4% and a 5%. And it's they're different brands. But the reason that I'm pairing this with these is that one of the most unique things with the Goza beer is that they're salty.
Yeah. And I thought is that it Goza with everything.
Well.
Or Goza with pretzels?
It does Goza with this book really well because okay. It's salty. Just like the tears that this fucking book made me cry. Afterlife with Archie, like, seriously choked me up, and, like, I may or may not have wept openly. So, I'm just saying.
So after spitting coffee
onto my dashboard, and then crying, yeah.
Are you sure it's because you didn't spill that coffee in your lap?
No, let's just say Wednesday was an emotional roller coaster for me. But, oh, God, this Tony, have you gotten this book yet?
No, I haven't. So that's why I'm hoping you're not going to spoil anything.
I'm going to spoil one thing because it's near the beginning. So in this book, Archie goes to pick out his dog Vegas as a puppy, and when Archie goes back to try and check on his parents, Hot Dog, the zombie dog, shows up, and he's about to attack Archie and. Archie's dog, Vegas, comes in and saves Archie Master. And the little words and thoughts from the dog just broke me down. You know, because he's like, he's just sitting there going, protect. And he's like, run, Archie Master, run. My life for yours. Live. Thank you forever. Love you. Like, and I'm just like, oh my God. Like, I'm about ready to cry again right now. So I'm going to drink my beer and shut up. And
that is why dogs are better than cats.
Yeah, because cats will eat you. But
sweet,
yeah. God, all right. Dang it. No, I'm all set.
I want to try this salty beer.
No, here I'll just cry into yours. Because
no, the tears from adults are not nearly as sweet as the tears of children. last call.
I'm so disturbed now.
God is dead. Number 8.
Stop. Oh, yeah, hold on. I got to catch my breath.
Oh. Iron Man number 22.
Hold on. God is dead. Tony really likes it. I'm kind of like, yeah, I don't know if I'm liking where this story is going. But they brought up Anansi, and so all of a sudden I'm hooked back in with the trickster gods being in it. So maybe I'll keep reading it if Tony keeps buying it.
I would give a shout out to the Punisher number 3 if I knew actually who created it. Twilight Zone number 3. Really good, but this one actually got somewhat predictable.
Which gotcha.
I wish they would have wrapped the story up in 2 and left you hanging and then moved on to the next story, but this still hasn't wrapped up.
Okay.
So apparently this story arc's going to go 4. I really was hoping more for the half-hour episode.
Rather than the full hour.
Well, this is going like hour and a half at this point.
Forever Evil number 6. We get another alternate backwards villain guy. Pretty good, but I don't know. It's one of the problems I have with the hokiness of DC heroes.
Uncanny X-Men number 18. I'm a little torn. Mm-hmm. The story is actually pretty decent. The artwork is a little jarring because I think it's Marco Rudy that did the art on that. He goes back and forth between two very different art styles all on the same page. Very realist, like realistic photorealism type stuff to your standard, I guess, comic book style. And it
looks like some stuff is painted and some stuff
is drawn.
Cross-stitched. I think that's what they call it.
What, cross-hatching?
Yeah, cross-hatching. There you go.
Yeah.
Cross stitch.
See, shut up. I at least shut up, Tony. Go back to being angry.
Yeah.
Loki number two is really good. Like, he is probably my favorite character.
I think it's kind of sweet. Speed dating with Loki. It's good.
Code Red number four from Xenoscope.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Finish. That I'm really liking that book, and I'm a little surprised.
The other thing that I thought was really interesting about having Lorelei in it is that she is now on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And so I'm like, oh, look at Marvel having to have a book that also describes the character to match her TV show. It's actually good marketing, but...
Night of the Living Deadpool is also good. One of the many Deadpool titles I have.
Tony, what did you think of Uncanny X-Men? I just saw that in your stack there.
I actually haven't gotten to it yet. There's a couple of them that I'm still... I didn't have time.
Yeah, I got a few left yet myself. Trillium, number seven. I'm actually wanting that book to wrap up a little bit.
Yeah.
You know. Apocalypse Al, or as everybody else that's seen it, thinks that it looks like it says Apocalypse AI. But it's Al. But that's issue 204 from Image. And cover by Franco Francavilla, the same guy who does Afterlife with Archie. Look, that cover, man. That if we did Best on Tap, I don't know why, but that cover just speaks to me.
Yeah, it looks like it'd be straight up Archie 2 right there. Well, at least for the Afterlife.
Yeah. Veil number one from Image from Greg Rucka and Tony Fedzula was actually really cool. Lady Rawhide, number four, proves my theory that her boobs get bigger every issue.
Have you been measuring? You should measure.
Well, they're starting to overlap themselves now.
Well, you should do a scientific experiment and measure.
Well, it all depends on how big he draws
them. You're right here first. Derek's going to come back next week with that.
Scale drawing of her face to boob ratio. There you go.
There you go. Yep. Last book I had was the most fucked up thing I've read in a long time.
Oh, yeah. I remember you getting this. And, was it good?
Yeah. The Auteur. Yeah. Written by Rick Spears, art by James Callahan and Luigi Anderson, and it's from Oni Press. That book is one of the most twisted, trippy, fucked up books I've ever read in my life, and it was fun as shit.
Did you read it sober?
Yeah, and
that's your problem.
Well, yeah. Well,
I think you should join the guys from An Elegant Weapon. And
well, I went back and then drank some beers and then reread it, and it was scarier, slightly under the influence. But yeah, that book was messed up. But holy shit, if you guys want something different, pick this book up. Not for children. Just
all right.
You should be able to probably figure that out by the eyeball with the mustache squirting out of the guy's head on the front cover. Or the other version, which was the Eric Powell version, which has Stan Lee with a woman's body putting his arms up behind his head and he's topless, and across the chest there's three X's that say Excelsior on there.
That might be Best on Tap.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's it. That's all that I got.
I guess the last one I want to throw out there is Hinterkind. It's still so beautiful and amazing. And for kids, not like your last one.
That's all ages?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say all ages. I mean, it's got fairy tales. Yeah, yeah, teenagers, I'd say.
PG-13.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, cool.
Well,
we got anything else?
I drank a really delicious Morning Glory espresso stout as we were recording today from Dominion Brewing.
Yeah.
It was delicious. Nice pinup girl on the label.
We got
good some review of that beer bottle.
Yeah, thank you.
We've got some potential upcoming news. We'll leave you with that little teaser.
We won't spoil it.
Well, not yet today. We can't yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, we've got some stuff. And listeners, if you guys like what we do, please do us a favor and go give us a review on iTunes. Because those little reviews are actually what help move us up higher so more people see us.
Indeed.
And if you don't like what we do, let us know, but not on
iTunes. Yeah. Well, just write us a good review anyway, and then let us know that you actually just lied about it.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that, too. But, yeah, you can find us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook. You can find us on Instagram.
Find us on Gazoogle.
Yeah, find us on Gazoogle.
You can find us at the bar.
Gazoogle is awesome. Yeah.
Keep reading your comics, and we'll be back next week.
Are you still angry?
Hulk. Word.